Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Museum of Modern Art. I am Anna Mikuni, and I had the privilege of being on the curatorial team that assisted Robert Storr, director of the 2007 Venice Biennale and former senior curator in the Department of Painting and Sculpture at the Museum of Modern Art. The Venice Biennale, also known as the Biennale, is an international exhibition of contemporary art that is held every 2 years. In fact, Biennale is the Italian for biennial. It is the oldest and most prestigious exhibition of this kind in the world. It was founded in 1895 by initiative of the Venetian City Council, headed by its mayor, the poet Riccardo Selvatico. The Venice Biennale remained the only international exhibition of contemporary art in the world until 1951, when the Sao Paulo Biennale was founded. And today, there are over 200 biennials around the world, from Santa Fe to Gwangju in South Korea. The Biennale is a giant and complex exhibition. There is a main exhibition within the Biennale that is curated by an appointed director, this year's Robert Storr. Then there are national pavilions. Their number varies each year. This year there are 76 total, which is a record number. And then there are several collateral events, over 70 this year. Just to give you an idea of the size of the Biennale, this year there are over 400 artists. In terms of visitors, in the first 100 opening days, there have been more than 232,000, making it by far Italy's most visited event. The main exhibition is set up in two venues: the Padiglione Italia in the Giardini and the Arsenale. Here on top is the map of the city of Venice with the Giardini and the Arsenale marked by these large purplish circles. And as you can see, they are located in the easternmost part of Venice. At the bottom, we see a map of the Giardini, which is a contained area with different buildings located within a public park, hence the name Giardini, in Italian meaning gardens. This, the Giardini, is the traditional venue of the exhibition, with the Padiglione Italia, where part of the main exhibition takes place, and 29 permanent national pavilions, which were built in the course of the 20th century. The Arsenale, on the other hand, is a recently added venue of the Biennale. It is a large area with different century-old buildings that were once used as shipyards and warehouses. One building in the Arsenale first opened after renovation as an exhibition venue of the Biennale in 1999. And since then, different buildings have been renovated for a total space of 183,000 square feet. In addition to the main exhibition, a few national pavilions have been allocated space here in the Arsenale, namely the Chinese Pavilion, this year for the second time, the Turkish Pavilion, and the African Pavilion, both of which were set up for the first time ever this year, although there is a permanent Egyptian pavilion in the Giardini. So national pavilions display works of art by their nationals, although they may be citizens who live abroad or domiciled foreigners. I'd like to say that almost all of the images I'm showing you today are courtesy of the Biennale's Historical Archives of Contemporary Art, known as ASAC, and I would like to thank them publicly for their generous help. An example of a citizen who lives abroad is Andreas Fogarashi, who lives in Vienna, where he was born, to Hungarian parents. This year, he represents Hungary with a four-part single-channel video installation from 2006 entitled Kultur und Freizeit, Culture and Leisure. These are stills from the videos, which show the current state of different cultural centers in present-day Budapest. These centers have survived Hungary's socialist period when they were built by the state after the model of the Russian workers' clubs. They are now partly closed and partly used by subcultural groups. Here I'm showing you just more stills from Fogarasi's videos, which are not documentaries in the strict sense, as much as they are sympathetic depictions of these centers. With Fogarasi's work, the Hungarian Pavilion won the Golden Lion for the best national participation. And this is one of four official prizes awarded by an international jury nominated by Rubber Store. A reverse example of a domiciled foreigner is Felix Gonzalez Torres, a Cuban-born, naturalized American artist representing the United States this year. By the way, the U.S. Pavilion is property of the Solomon Guggenheim Foundation that purchased it from the Museum of Modern Art about 20 years ago in 1986. Here, I'm showing you pictures of Gonzalez Torres's works. From the upper left, going clockwise, two giant Carrara marble discs at the entrance of the pavilion, and this is a work realized for the first time from sketches for two reflecting pools that the artist made before he died in 1996. Then, on the right, top, the one of Gonzalez Torres's light bulb of strings, the one that is the longest and final string from 1994, entitled America, and it is the only touch of light in an otherwise very dark pavilion, both literally and metaphorically. At the bottom, more works by Gonzalez Torres from his famous takeaway series, Paper Stacks, and a candy floor piece on the right bottom. Both works bear references to war. The paper stacks from 1989 are each inscribed with a phrase, Memorial Day weekend and Veterans Day sale, respectively, while the candies resemble missiles in their color and shape. Gonzalez Torres is also included in Storr's exhibition, along with other artists who died prematurely and whose work speaks to us with renewed immediacy today. There are two works by Gonzalez Torres installed in the Padiglione Italia, and they deal with the notion of a physical and conceptual boundary. There is a double mirror piece from 1991, entitled Orpheus Twice, on top here, and a curtain made of gold plastic beads from 1995, entitled Golden, that is placed at the entrance of one of the galleries. Here at the bottom you see another version of the curtain in blood red. He also made one in green, colors that allude to body fluids and medications against AIDS, which claimed the artist's life in 1996. A conceptual artist who did not give up aesthetics, Gonzalez Torres is the artist who was most fundamental in the conceptualization of Storr's exhibition. As Storr put it, quote, "His is the spirit that presides over this exhibition." Unquote. Gonzalez Torres made works that are striking for their lyricism, intellectual courage, and economy of means. This lecture will focus on Robert Storr's exhibition, entitled Think with the Senses, Feel with the Mind, Art in the Present Tense. This exhibition brings together about 100 artists from all over the world. They are of different generations, they work in different media, and they have different artistic approaches. Some artists, such as Leon Ferrari and Gabriele Basilico, are well established, while others, such as Emily Prince and the collective Alterazioni Video, are emerging artists. There are also artists such as Oscar Munoz and El Anatsui, who are well known in their own countries but are new to the international scene. In terms of the exhibition concept, as Storr put it, quote, "The show constitutes a proposition about art. By focusing on the conceptual component of what we sense and on the sensual component of what we think, I'm suggesting that these categories are indissolubly linked," unquote. As the title implicates and predicates, this exhibition is an invitation to engage with art on all of its complex levels, intellectual as well as perceptual and emotional. This resonates particularly powerfully in a country like Italy with a strong Christian tradition that inherited the Neoplatonic antithesis of mind and body. But there is more to it. What Storr had in mind when conceiving of his exhibition was the anti-aesthetic argument promoted by art historians and critics in the United States since the early 80s. Particularly the claim that aesthetic pleasure and critical engagement are fundamentally irreconcilable. Storr is the first American curator ever to be nominated director of the Biennale, and the third non-Italian curator, after the French Jean Clair and the Swiss Harold Zeman. Besides the roster of American artists Storr contributed to this exhibition, what he brought to the Biennale as an American is his position in favor of art that not only is charged with content, but also speaks to the senses, breaking down the dichotomy between conceptual and perceptual, political and poetical, thought and feeling. The Arsenale opens with a large and complex installation by Italian artist Luca Buvoli that is strongly anti-utopian. It is a bittersweet retrospective look at Italian futurism, an avant-garde movement from the early 20th century that exalted modern technology, and when Benito Mussolini took power, it embraced fascism. By the way, there are outstanding futurist works from the early phases of the movement before the beginning of fascism on view here at the museum on the fifth floor. There's a small gallery completely dedicated to futurism, and I invite you all to visit it. Buvoli's work is from 2007 and is entitled Un bellissimo dopodomani, A Very Beautiful Day After Tomorrow, from a sentence that Filippo Tommaso Marinetti, the founder of Futurism, told his daughter Vittoria when he was approaching the end of his life and the fascist regime was about to collapse. On top, you see a computer-generated study of the installation, which comprises propaganda posters, 3D versions of futurist graphics, notice the letter M of tomorrow on the end wall that has fallen down as a visual metaphor for the failure of modernist, and fascist aspirations. Then, There is a section with suspended vectors that recalls futurist installation practices of engaging the space fully, floor to ceiling, as part of the propaganda activities of the fascist regime. In Bouvelet's installation, there are also videos, including interviews with Marinetti's elderly daughters and the reading of Marinetti's manifesto by individuals who have aphasia. Storr's exhibition is a pretty serious exhibition about the troubled times in which we live. War and death are two themes that run through the show. On top left is a view of works by the Argentinian artist Leon Ferrari, placed right after Bouvelet's installation in the Arsenale. Ferrari is among the oldest artists in the exhibition, is in his early 80s, and he has been awarded the Golden Lion dedicated to an artist exhibited in the main exhibition, meaning Storr's exhibition. Here on the right is a 1965 work with Christ crucified on an American bomber, entitled The Western and Christian Civilization. At the bottom are recent collages from 2004, in which Ferrari appropriated details from medieval and Renaissance representations of the dams, juxtaposing them with newspaper articles and images relating to war. Here on the left is one of the horrifying Abu Ghraib prison photographs, and on the right, silhouettes of Marines. These collages are part of a series entitled Nunca Más, Never Again. Ferrari is an iconoclast, and he made politically activist art during his country's military dictatorship in the 70s. His scorn for Christian values is rooted in the history of his own country, Argentina, where during the military dictatorship and its political repression, church and state were going hand in hand. Contemporary politics is addressed in a poignant poetic way in the work by Colombian artist Oscar Muñoz in his project for a memorial from 2003-2005. It is a five-channel video projection showing a hand painting the features of five faces with a brush and water on a gray surface that is hot stone. These are two shots of the five videos. As soon as the first mark goes down, it starts to evaporate. And when the finished portrait has faded away, the cycle recommences. These faces are taken from pictures found in the newspapers of people who have disappeared in the drug war in Colombia. Just like water evaporates on hot stone, and memory fades. But the act of strenuously repaint as water evaporates stands as a powerful metaphor for the recollection of loss and permanent resistance. Also, a memorial and an archive of memory is Emily Prince's wall installation of detailed pencil drawings of American servicemen and women who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan. Prince has made almost 4,000 of these little portraits, and this is a work in progress, so maybe by now she's made even more than 4,000. And the source for them, for these portraits, is a military website. She has also annotated biographical information on these vellum cards, and where you see there is no face on a card is because there was no picture on the website, but just the biographical information on that soldier. The colors of the cards reflect the racial diversity of the victims, and the layout shows their demographics as the cards are placed in correspondence of their towns of origin. So you see the map of the United States coming out, right? Emily Prince is American, and she is the youngest artist in the exhibition. She is 26 years old. Another work dealing with contemporary politics and adopting the subject of portraiture is In Jerusalem by Iranian-born, New York-based artist YZ Kami from 2005-2006. These are painted portraits of the leaders of Jerusalem's biggest religious communities in their religious garbs, from left to right, the Sunni Muslim, the Catholic, the Eastern Orthodox, the Sephardic, and the Ashkenazi. These portraits were individually cropped from a New York Times article picture that showed them together. The framing of a single figure and the blurred quality of these portraits are typical of Camille's work since the early 90s. These formal qualities contribute a sense of concentration as well as unrest. There are very few occasions when these leaders would get together, one would imagine, and the reason why they did was because the one thing they could agree on was that they would like to ban a gay parade in Jerusalem. That was in March of 2005. In this cropped guise, however, they look so farcical. From the other side of the Palestinian-Israeli war, these are Tomer Ganihar's photographs of mannequins used for medical training at an Israeli hospital. These photographs are part of a 2006 series entitled Hospital Party, and they express the unclear boundary between reality and fiction, sanity and insanity at war times. Ganihar took them when he was serving as a soldier in the Israeli army. He's now based in New York and he is a self-taught photographer. Now I'd like to show you photographs by two artists. This is one of them, the Italian Gabriele Basilico, who deal with the less dramatic and less identifiable aspects of war and its aftermaths. These are photographs from the series Beirut 1991 that Basilico started to take a year after the end of the civil war that began in 1975. They depict deserted and desolate streets. Some look like pictures of an abandoned city, and others, more clearly, like pictures of a wounded city. But there are no signs that can help us identify the place, and the anonymity of these spaces doesn't make these pictures less troubling, but more. Even stronger is the sense of disorientation one experiences when confronted with these recent photographs by Japanese artist Tomoko Yoneda, who is an admirer of Basilico's work. The titles of Yoneda's photographs tell us about the places depicted and their present or past wars. The titles of the photographs I'm showing you here are From Top Right Going Clockwise, Hill 2, View of Serbian Frontline During the Siege of Sarajevo. Next, Border, View of Israel from a Hezbollah-controlled village, Lebanon. Next, Sniper View, View from Christian Sniper Position Overlooking No Man's Land, Beirut. And the title of the photograph with colorful seats is Minefield, View of Minefield Located by Tourist Attraction in the Demilitarized Zone, Paju City, South Korea. Basilicas and Ioannidis photographs are not displayed side by side, but across the diagonal of a very large gallery in the Arsenale. Visibility and invisibility is the focus of a video work by the Italian collective Alterazioni Video entitled Painting from 2007. In a slow and constant motion, the camera loops around the continuous outer walls of the San Vittore jail in Milan, recording the constant layering of written messages and erasures over time. It is a very political and poetic work on the function of jail walls as a membrane between the inside and the outside of jail, and as a means of communication with the outside world for the prisoners. These are stills from the video, and the writings are in Italian. They read on the left, "Stones on the police, all free," and the other one is cut, but it would read, "Free all the prisoners." Political, but with a refreshing frugality of means, similarly to Alterazioni Video's work, is the piece by Japanese artist Hiroharu Mori entitled A Camouflaged Question in the Air from 2003. Here at the bottom is a still from his video showing different people, including the artist himself, who take turns to hold a large balloon with gigantic camouflaged question mark. Each person is shown standing in the middle of a park and looking right at the camera. Mori also installed the balloon in the corridor of the Arsenale near his video, and he had small balloons with the same camouflaged question mark that visitors could bring with themselves. This is something Mori devised to involve the public directly. Mori conceives of art as open-ended and a catalyst that can galvanize the viewers to re-evaluate established conventions, and also activate their awareness of present issues. In A Camouflaged Question in the Air, one's thought goes to current wars and their unclear future. Political satire and humor characterize the cartoon-like graffiti by Romanian artist Dan Periavsky. Here we see him at work in the Giardini, and he has also a space in the Arsenale. It's white, not black, so it's marks, black marks on white rather than white marks on black. Periavsky's graffiti are ephemeral. He uses chalk and permanent markers on walls that will then be repainted or just taken away. And they are site-specific, as they always incorporate themes and motifs he picks up from the mass media and popular culture of the place where he is at work. The content is a mix of local and global politics, economics, and culture. By the way, recently Periavsky sketched his graffiti all over a wall in the atrium here at the Museum of Modern Art as part of the project's series exhibition curated by Roxana Marcocci. Dealing with the theme of human death in a seemingly casual way is the Chinese artist Yang Zhengzong with his 10-channel video projection from 2002, in which people of different ages and from different backgrounds and countries utter the same phrase, "I will die." The videos are very large, and they overwhelm the space with their simultaneous and conflicting visual and sound effects, making the inevitable truth of personal death a very public, uneasy statement. Somehow optimistic in their bricolage spirit are the lush wall hangings by African artist El Anatsui from Ghana, living in Nigeria. These dazzling, visually sumptuous hangings are made of salvaged metal parts that have been meticulously stitched together. In the Arsenale, two of these wall hangings were installed in their and their undulating tapestry-like aspect, they recall the Ghanaian tradition of hand-woven kente cloth, which is a very colorful pattern cloth. From these details of the hangings, you can see that El Anatsui has used bottle caps, metal tags, food tins, and packaging materials, which are part of everyday contemporary life in Africa. In the exhibition, there is also an installation in which, as Storr put it, quote, the redirected lives of its authors are more than half the work, unquote. It is the Mourinho Project, which was started 10 years ago, not with the goal of making art, by a group of children and adolescents from the poorest of families in Rio de Janeiro, who banded together to construct a miniature model of their homes in the shanty towns or favelas on the hills surrounding the middle and upper class section of the metropolis. Mourinho in Portuguese means little hill. Mourinho used this model to reenact daily life in the favelas with animated games. The model is made of leftover bricks and other scavenged materials. Here you see a detail that shows the reconstruction of a football match. Contrary to the lawless and violent reality of the favelas, Mourinho's reenactments are violent-free and regulated by democratically agreed-upon rules. And this is not just a game, as forswearing violence is a condition for belonging to Mourinho. Here you see another detail. I'm not sure you can read the writing, but that handwritten carver says in Portuguese, "Let's invade the Venice Biennale." The Mourinho Project is installed in the space between pavilions right near the front side of the US pavilion, a choice motivated by practical reasons, but open to be read in political terms as well. The idea of occupying the area between pavilions was Storr's idea since the beginning of his appointment as director of the Biennale, as a strategy to counter the conventional legality of the national pavilion structure in the Giardini, which was modeled after the world's fairs of the second half of the 19th century and reflected the nationalism of the time when this structure was established. The Mourinho Project is particularly effective in this respect, being a model of spontaneous growth, but also self-transformation for the creation of a model community regulated by self-government. To conclude, I would like to end by addressing some of the critiques that have been raised against Storr's exhibition. There has been a lot of polemics, especially in Italy, about the fact that there are too few Italian artists in this exhibition, and that most of them are either based in New York or have a pied-à-terre here. Why? For practical constraints. As Storr explained in an interview published in the Italian version of the art newspaper, Il Giornale dell'Arte, Storr moved to Venice in January in preparation of the exhibition, and he had planned to travel around Italy to visit artist studios. But because of several tough complications with the Biennale administration, he could not visit as many artist studios as he had originally planned. Another criticism pertains to the display at the Arsenal, and I showed you many photographs from there, which has never looked so good. So the display has been criticized, the installation has been criticized as too museum-like by critics such as Marcia Vetrock. But one wonders what's wrong with a well-installed and well-lit exhibition. Why does an exhibition need to look messy to be considered more in tune with the present? Another aspect of the installation that has been criticized is the monographic arrangement. by which works by a single artist are displayed together in a clearly defined space. But in large exhibitions, such as the Biennale, having clusters of works by different artists is often very problematic. That's what we get in fairs, art fairs. And there is a commercial reason behind, but in international exhibitions, the saturation effect of these jungles of works can and should be avoided. Monographic installations do not prevent dialogue between works. Indeed, correspondences and ecos are a striking characteristic of Storr's Biennale, arranged a la Baudelaire, one may say. The exhibition as a whole is a poem in free verse with rhymes that pop up along the way, or like a symphony with variations on a theme, crescendos and counterpoints. In more literal terms, it is a coherent exhibition without clusters of works organized thematically, but with animated dialogues between works displayed either nearby or far away from each other. Thank you.